It's always like touch this.
Stalker is a 1979 science fiction art film directed by Tarkovsky. Screenplay written by Boris and Arkady Strugatsky, loosely based on their 1972 novel Roadside Picnic. The film combines elements of science fiction with dramatic, philosophical, and psychological themes. The film tells the story of an expedition led by a figure known as the Stalker, who takes his two clients, a melancholic writer seeking inspiration and a professor seeking scientific discovery, to a mysterious restricted site known simply as the Zone, where there supposedly exists a room which grants a person's innermost desires. The trio travel through unnerving areas filled with the debris of modern society while engaging in many arguments. Initially mixed reviews, now it's sort of a cult film. Film grossed $4 million worldwide, mostly in the USSR, against a budget of 1 million Soviet rubles. Opening thoughts.
Yeah. Do you want to keep... What was the first thing that you thought was the most interesting?
Who? Huh? Eliza or me? Who are you asking?
Anybody, everybody.
I was talking to you, Charles.
No, it's a round table right here. Yeah. What's the best entry
Okay. Well, that Slavoj essay was crazy, by the way. It's long, but he links it to Solaris really well. So on that, I was just going to say, he says... Okay, so we'll open it with like his kind of first take. He says, Stalker perfectly exemplifies this paradoxical logic of the limit which separates our everyday reality from the phantasmatic space. In Stalker, this phantasmatic space is the mysterious zone, the forbidden territory in which the impossible occurs, in which secret desires are realized, in which one can find technological gadgets not yet invented in our everyday reality, etc. Only criminals and adventurers are ready to take the risk and enter this domain of phantasmatic otherness. What one should insist on in a materialist reading of Tarkovsky is the constitutive role of the limit itself. This mysterious zone is effectively the same as our common reality. What confers on it the aura of mystery is the limit itself, i.e. the fact that the zone is designated as inaccessible, as prohibited. No wonder that when the heroes finally enter the mysterious room, they become aware that there is nothing special or outstanding in it. The Stalker implores them not to impart this news to the people outside the zone so that they do not lose their gratifying illusions. So, you know, he's selling hope, kind of. That's his big trick, sort of.
Mm. Well, he's also kind of dealing with desire as a such, right? Like, especially with the, what is it, Porcupine? Right?
Yeah.
The character Porcupine. Yeah. Is like, oh, you know, like, he really was like, well, if he really wanted something back, he could have got his brother back. And so, well, he actually, it was revealed that his actual desire was that he wanted to make tons and tons of money.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, desire is kind of this terrible thing that, like, it'd be really nice, like, with the writer and the physicist or whatever, they kind of want to get to the bottom of it. But the worst thing is that, like, once you recognize your desire, you recognize how terrible it is.
Yeah, and
that, so it's always better to, like, yeah.
And Ryder sort of touches on that, like, when, like, he's, like, about to go in, and then he's like, no, I'm good, like, I'd rather drink myself to death in quiet at home. He's just like, yeah, that sounds shit. Like, he's kind of, like, the first one. He seems, like, most aware of his direction for most of the film kind of thing. Like, he's the most, he just seems the most purposeful.
Well, he's kind of like the bad guy at the start because, like, he recognizes that for a point. He's like, are you happy for me to die to the Stalker? He's, you kind of think I'm a garbage person and that's why you thought I could go first?
Yeah, when they argue about the matchsticks and shit.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess, like, you know, the Stalker is sort of like a man of faith. So he's operating on sort of a moralistic basis. So, like, you know, desire is like the true revelation of someone's moral core, right? Like, I was thinking about that. I can't remember if it's it's in Italy somewhere. There's like this fountain, and it's like got a face, the face of God, and you have to put your hand in the mouth, and apparently, like the mouth chops your hand off if you're impure. And it reminded me of the same thing, where
Is
it's
this a
just
real
like this
thing?
this real test. It is a real place. Whether or not it cuts your hand off, probably not. I very much doubt that people put their hands in there, but like it's the same sort of thing, right? It's just like, and like even if it was real, who would put their hand in there? You know, you could be the most pious person and still like be worried that you're like you're unconscious or your mind or whatever is like pretty filthy.
Sorry, I was just trying
Now,
to formulate
okay.
it.
Right, Eliza's out of here.
See
Yeah, so
ya.
Charles, it's like pub tea time. Yeah, it's pub tea time.
All right,
Yeah.
enjoy.
Bye. I really like. I'm glad you like.
But yeah, go on.
Oh, one sec. Sorry. Just checking that everything's recording all good
Sort
and
of,
whatnot.
it's interesting. It's interesting as well that it's like it is. Well, I don't know if that's the case or not, but the stalker himself, I can't remember what his name is, but he finds it like an article of faith, like to go into the zone isn't like a, it's not a, it's not a scientific miracle, and it's not like a riotly ambition. It's this sort of like this is godly space.
Sorry. I'm just trying to fix up my audio. Okay, I'm good now. Sorry. So like, man, it was kind of, I had some good takes and then I read the Slavoj essay. I was like, damn, everything, he just nails it so well sometimes, especially with this. Like, I don't know if he speaks about Stalker or Solaris in any of
Pretty
his
convincing guy,
like
yeah.
Pervert's Guide films. I don't know if it gets a mention. But like there should be like I wish he did like a film version of this
Maybe
essay.
Solaris.
Yeah, maybe Solaris.
Yeah.
But he says
Potentially.
not to like overquote him, but it just kind of gets the wheels rolling in like exactly the right direction on the it just I don't know, as I hate just like it's like a silly podcast if I just like paraphrase Ziz for everything, but like I've got to do just a couple more. So he says, in what then does the opposition between the zone in Stalker and the planet Solaris consist? In Lacanian terms, of course, their opposition is easy to specify. It is the opposition between the two excesses, the excess of stuff over symbolic network, the thing for which there is no place in this network which eludes its grasp, and the excess of an empty place over stuff, over the elements which fill it in. The zone is a pure structural void constituted slash defined by a symbolic barrier. Beyond this barrier, in the zone, there is nothing and or exactly the same things as outside the zone. This opposition stands for the opposition between drive and desire. Solaris is the thing, the blind libido embodied, while the zone is the void which sustains desire. This opposition also accounts for the different way the zone and Solaris relate to the subject's libidinal economy. In the midst of the zone, there is the chamber of desires, the place in which, if the subject penetrates it, his desire wish is fulfilled. While what the thing Solaris returns to subjects who approach it is not their desire, but the traumatic kernel of their fantasy, the symptom which encapsulates their relation to jouissance, you know that French word, like the orgasmic jouissance, and which they resist in their daily lives. So I think that's like a perfect contrast summary of like the two, like they're related around aspects of desire, but it points out the perfect symbolic differences of the two films that like kind of you could like you on the surface almost seem like they're about the same metaphysical concept, but there is like an almost yin and yang difference to them where they're all sort of opposite.
Most definitely. I think we talked about this earlier with Solaris, is that like the sort of terrifying aspect of having your desire granted to the point where like you realize that there's nothing worse than like having your desire given to you. And this is sort of broached in Stalker as well with the story of Porcupine. Like, oh, why couldn't he get his brother back? It's like, well, really, he didn't want to get his brother back. And like, the worst thing was that, his deepest self, his desire was to be rich rather than to have his brother back. Whereas, like, in Stalker, this
You
sense of
mean
drive
in
and
Solaris?
no desire. I'm talking about Stalker now. Like,
Oh.
in this sense of desire in Stalker, is, or before in Solaris, but now in Stalker, is like the recognition that the worst thing to do is to recognize your desire. You always have to be just around it. Like, the best thing to do with your desire is just be right near it. Like, never, like, Lacan talks about desire as this thing that you're always firing for and just missing, just off to the side. You're always just off all the time. Like, you always misunderstand the object cause of desire versus desire itself. So you're always, and that's good. That's good. That's a good thing, because if you got your desire, you'd be like, this is fucked, like.
Well, yeah, that and the last thing from Slavoj
You
is
know what
like
I
he
mean?
says
Like,
that like in Stalker, you never arrive at or reach the level of sorry. You never arrive at or reach the level of pure innocent wish slash belief, while in Solaris your dreams slash fantasies are realized in advance in the psychotic structure of the answer which precedes the question. So, like, Stalker focuses on the problem of belief and faith. The chamber does fulfill desires, but only to those who believe with direct immediacy, which is why when the three adventurers finally reach the threshold of the room, they're afraid to enter it since they're not sure what their true desires or wishes are. So they're kind of already aware of bit like that they should be afraid to enter it because they realize, oh, like, they know about Porcupine. Oh, like, yeah, like. Do I really want to know? Whereas in Solaris, it's just like, oh, you love your wife because she's, I mean, you love your wife because she's dead. Live with that.
Like, you love your dead wife because, like, you couldn't make her undead, you know what I mean? Like, you could, like, the only reason you love her is because you were never able to not stop her from dying or whatever. But, like, yeah, that's to make a long story short. But yeah, I think that's right? Like, what, I guess, like what Zizek said, like, what's worse, having your desire granted to you before you think it, or have the ability to think, no, I have the space. You know what I mean? Like,
You kind of lose either way, but I guess like I mean, look at it like Solaris is
I
definitely
think in
a happier
Stalker, you
ending.
win
I
the
mean,
whole
sorry,
way.
Stalker's definitely a happier ending than Solaris. Like, everyone is alive
Yeah,
and
most
like has
definitely.
learned something and about themselves and they're kind of like, okay, I see this relationship with desire and not obtaining it, whereas Solaris is just kind of like the to the characters like boom, like this is what's fucked in your head. This is what happens when you like mess with this kind of like
Well, I mean,
godlike
like,
being that is the
look to
planet.
the end of Solaris as well, right? Like,
What's that, sorry?
yeah, exactly. Like, even at the end of Solaris, it's like, well, even at the end of Solaris, he's still on the planet. If anything, he's when he wants to go home, he's the closest to his desire. Like, he's more close to it than anything. But the interesting thing, I think, about Stalker, and, like, I don't know if you've seen that Adam Curtis documentary, Hypernormalization. He reads it politically. He reads it politically as the period in Soviet Russia when everything was really fucked up, like, and the Soviet,
For
like, Russia
Stalker
was
or for
crumbling,
Solaris?
and
For
all
Stalker.
Stalker, and, like, everything was crumbling, and everyone kind of had to just deal with the fact that, like, in the media, the Soviet Union was really sick and awesome. But in actuality, everyone was, like, beating each other to shit for a piece of bread. And so, like, the zone was this place where, like, you could be like, yeah, I know exactly what I want. At the same time, the whole reality was totally different, like, and they always kind of talk about this, like all throughout the movie. They're like, well, you can get there, but you can't get there directly, and, like, it changes exactly what you want when you want, like, you know what I mean? Like, this weird feeling of, like, constantly having to deal with, like, not have any grounding with anything.
Ryder talks about that.
You know what I mean? Like,
He talks about
Yeah.
how when, like, when he tries to write about something and then it changes, kind of thing. It's that whole like quantum physics phenomenon sort of thing. Like he tries to write, and like he has some awesome monologues in it where he's like talking shit about like his critics and other writers and
It's
stuff.
really good.
I was gonna quote some of it, but I like
Yeah,
just
he
it
was
went
talking
too long.
about
Like the
that,
whole
like.
kind of like it's like the third quarter of the movie where he just like starts like just ranting, and he's just like, yeah, fuck this, like this is fucking stupid.
It's, I think I really like his monologue where he's talking about people became too literate and they're just like eating everything up. Like
He
there's too many
says
people that know too much, and so
he
like now
describes
it's like.
writing as like getting rid of hemorrhoids or something.
Exactly. But he also talks about like the sense of fact and fiction aren't that different. Like there's a problem now with fact and fiction, and that's pretty like pretty contemporary, right? Like there's a problem now, especially with this the sense that like fact and fiction can be kind of manipulated because there's been a sort of a point where like everything's been rooted. Where like, I guess you have like someone like Boris Johnson or Donald Trump or somebody where it's just like, oh yeah, you know I'm lying to you, so why would I lie to you? You know what I mean? Like it's just that really weird paradox where you're like, wait, what? Like, and so like you either assume that he's lying to you, and if so,
It's
like
like
that's a fact, right? Like,
post
and it all,
post
yeah.
politics, where it's just like, oh, everything's a joke and a meme, so like there's no boundaries anymore on what we can do and say in that, like it's
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly. I don't know
again,
if that's
like
the
Slavoj's
case,
talked about it
but
heaps, where it's like now it's established that like it is a joke and everyone knows it's a joke, but we still go along with the joke because it's kind of just like, yeah, well, anything goes now, like, because everything's a joke and nothing matters, like, and that's a really dangerous sort of stance to take when it comes to politics, because it's like somehow it's like somehow managed to
Yeah.
incorporate that sort of like nihilistic worldview into the reality of politics, which is sort of, you know, the least welcoming place. I mean, the place where like any nihilistic views are sort of least useful.
Exactly. Like I think, and this goes back to the Adam Curtis documentary as well. Just like Adam Curtis in general was like, he talks about how like contemporary politics sort of deals with making up the most terrible future possible, and then just trying to like maneuver around it, rather than any like political movement that can actually like do anything or try to like uplift any, like working class or any sort of ambitious point. It's more just like, can we stop anything from happening? Can we just be like kept in this perfect stasis? You know what I mean? Which is sort of like sort of where you find these new politicians that, which is just like, this is pretty crazy, right? And they kind of play that stasis where like they know that like the worst thing to happen with for them to actually have a deal with, I don't know, realistic political interests. And so like you have people who are like reality TV stars or whatever, and that seems more real than politics, right? Because they've just gotten to a point where it's just like, what I tell you isn't the truth, like ever since like was it when Bill Clinton came in and he sort of was like running on like a like anti-NAFTA bill. He was like, no, we won't do that, like Democrats won't do that. And as soon as people voted him in, he passed it straight away. And people would just realized how little power there was in changing politics, at least in America, how little the point was. And then you have like Tony Blair in Britain, stuff like that, how little like, voting might change the person, the way they look, but it does nothing for like politics, the game. You know what I mean? And like, so I think that's a big part of the movie, like this sense of just like, well, yeah, we can, the images are shifting, but nothing else is. Like that's all it is. You know what I mean? Yeah. What else? What else? What else do you feel?
Well, an easy one we could talk about Monkey, his daughter. So They kind of like she, you know, she's very like she's sort of shrouded in mystery for the whole film. And writer and scientist talk. They say like, oh, apparently he has a mutant daughter. She has no legs. They say, yeah, but actually she can't walk. She has legs. We see that she has legs. But you do get the sense. Yeah. And Stalker touches on it as well. Like he could, he says he couldn't give anything to her, his wife. So I think like, obviously like the fact that, she can't walk, like was like a massive issue in their relationship. And it could have been like, it's sort of alluded to by like him being exposed to like maybe excessive amounts of radiation from the zone or something like that. And so like, you know, it's definitely got that sort of Chernobyl vibe, to the film. Especially like, and it's almost looks like they're in that area. Like when you see the factory backgrounds and stuff like that.
Well, I thought they were they not in that?
It's not specified. Where were they? It's not specified. It says unknown time, it seems unknown place.
Well, it seems like it would definitely be around there, hey, because like the way all the setting, like, all the sets and stuff,
That's so it does have that kind of like Chernobyl vibe, because also like Stalker always has like has like chapped lips and like kind of like blotchy skin and like the white patch on his head. So he just like he looks kind of like he's like chemically altered a little bit, like from overexposure, and then you know, so like he's really sad that like, because he thinks it's sort of his fault that his child is deformed, not deformed anyway, but just that she can't walk. Like,
which is disabled.
He blames it on himself. But they do toy with that a lot, because like you don't see her walking at all, and they talk about her having no legs, and then you see that she actually has legs, but then you see the crutches at the bench like towards the end, and then after that, she's on his shoulders. And he's walking, but the camera is close enough to her that it looks like it's her walking. And then it zooms out, and then you see that it's her on his shoulders. And then I think after that is the part when she moves the glasses, like with her mind, like so. Like that's so random. Like she has these like alien superpowers. Like
I really like that. I thought it was very cool.
Yeah,
with the sound of the train and stuff, it was interesting that like.
Yeah.
And it sort of comes back to, I think there was a scene somewhere where he was talking about, like, the writer was talking about, like, oh, blast furnaces and all these, like, industrial things don't serve to make anyone happier. They just serve to make people consume.
Yeah, I think the writer or Tarkovsky, like someone had a massive bee in their bonnet about extraneous noises like that, like, because it's, like, exemplified in the whole film where they're just, like, these fucking trains. And like he mentions that at the zone, like, cause he's like marveling at the peace and quiet. And, whoever was responsible for that part of the plot, like obviously, you know, cause some people don't mind noise in their daily life. They like, you know, they like to live in a busy sounding world, but this person was obviously like, it would be annoying to live. I mean, some people say they get used to, like, when they live, like, under a train track, they say they get used to it, but, like, that rattling and stuff does look like it would get to you.
Yeah, well, I guess, like, you have, like, a contemporary sort of issue there would be, like, people who say they live under, like, air, like, windmill farms, and they say they get sick from it, which is interesting. Have you ever seen that? Like, the massive mill farms, they say they get sick from it and they can't sleep and all this stuff. And apparently they make no sound whatsoever.
All these people noisy, have been told that it makes them sick. They're loud when you're near them.
Are they?
Yeah. Like,
well, yeah, apparently.
Have you seen the one at Rottnest?
The position of them doesn't make any sound. No, I haven't.
It's noisy. You can hear it from 100 meters away. Like, it would be annoying.
Apparently, like it's not supposed to bother any of these people, but apparently it makes them all sick and stuff. But, no, but that's why they put them out to sea and shit,
because they are annoying.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. Like it's an interesting case. But the writer talks about how like the problem is that people aren't working anymore; they're consuming, and so like their bodies have become sort of like a problem. They don't need to be able to like use their legs or arms. You just need your mind now. And I thought that was like, sort of the like the relationship to monkey, right? Like is that the
monkey?
Is that
yeah?
The daughter's name is
just
Monkey.
Like the affectionate name, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that that was sort of the case there, that it's just like you don't really need any of these things anymore, and like it was kind of like a problem for them, but really, like, as long as you have the power of the mind, right? Like, as long as you have this like sense of and you look at it now with the internet and stuff like that, and you know whether or not that's good or bad, who knows? As long as there's that sort of capability, it's still a thing. Like, there is no point to have these things anymore.
Yeah.
These like productive limbs or whatever, but yeah, I don't know. That was my take.
Yeah, well, as you, and you also mentioned the train noise with the music. It's another example because we talked about it in it was in Pi and a few of the others we've watched where the sound effects becomes
Yeah,
part
the
of
ones
the
that
beat
play into it.
of the song because it's like Ode to Joy is in time with the train wheels in the
Yeah.
end, and it's
Oh, that's
crazy.
really good, yeah. I really like that. What do you think about this like this black dog that was following them around the whole time?
Yeah, I don't know. Was it just like a small plot device? Like it's funny because you know how I said I watched the first time I watched it, I didn't look up any external sources, so I just watched it. And it's one of those movies where you're like, "Am I missing something? Like, am I missing?" And you are like, because it's everything is extra symbolic. That's just the Tarkovsky way. And the dog, I haven't really gotten anywhere on that. Like, it is. Yeah, I don't know. You could read it a lot of different ways. Maybe he just put it in there to be quirk. It's not like a specific symbolic thing like some other parts. Maybe it's just like you can read this lots of ways. Like I don't know if there's like that much thought behind it.
I thought my initial concern, and this is just like straight off the bat, is that like there was a sense of almost depression, like you know, Black Dog or whatever, that was like following around this, you know, they were haunted by this sort of like depression, like that's so close to desire. You know what I mean? Like, because they were all kind of concerned with this problem that they all had. You know, like one was like, the physicist was kind of like, yeah, fuck it, like, you know, I'm happy to fail as long as I figure out this thing or, you know, destroy it. And the writer was like, I want to get renewed inspiration up until he gets to the point. Like, was there like this sense that this problem, like this, and they kind of talk about it as well as this human nature of always being kind of disappointed by everything a little bit, you know? And I thought that, like, you know, this dog, and it might be a too little literal or symbolic translation, but there was like this depressive state that continued to like hinder everybody.
Well, I'll take it even
Well,
further. I would say that I think the dog is basically representing like the Grim Reaper, like and death
right,
because well, it's actually quite well. There's one obvious scene where the dog's guarding the skeletons in that sort of like there's that like really like narrow hallway rocky bit.
Difficult thing,
None of them go in there, and it's they sort of allude to like maybe scientist looks in there because he's near it, but he doesn't. That nothing to. It's just the dog is guarding it, and it zooms in, and it's fucking creepy because it's like two skeletons sort of like in a hug,
Yeah,
like
together.
And you're not sure if it's a skeleton until the camera gets close enough. But the other time, the dog first approaches them when they're lying in the like they're you know they're lying pressed against the earth in the kind of like stream just about. And the
I
like,
really like
well,
that
the
as well.
fuck thing is like doing stuff like that in the filming is probably how they got such a big exposure to the chemicals that ended up killing the actors in real life.
So, what in that case, I mean, maybe it's handy to move on to that now. Is that like, what's the deal with that? Like, why did what was the chemical exposure? What was all that about?
Well,
Like,
because they
you seem to
filmed
know a
it,
little bit.
they all of the filming was done in like abandoned chemical plants and stuff, where like
Not
there
near,
wasn't like
it's
proper
not
disposal
Chernobyl, is it?
techniques. They just kind of filmed it like in all these fucked up places, where you know they just like tipped out like seriously harmful things like straight into the ground and stuff, like because they were abandoning them
Really?
or not tipped them out at all, and then. The production of this particular film involved them like splashing around in that water and everything. It's like, oh, like, because I think
It was really
most of them
beautiful
died of
movie.
cancer within like maybe 5 or 10 years of the filming.
Really?
Yeah, including
Wow.
Tarkovsky.
I mean, yeah, that's shocking because I saw someone comment on the. I watched it on Canopy, and someone was like, "This is the biggest exercise in irresponsible filmmaking I've ever seen." And I was like, "Wow, damn, okay." I don't know if that's the case, but like, do you think they knew that, or they were just like happy to do it, or like.
I don't think they knew. I maybe they just didn't give it that much thought. Maybe they like, maybe, yeah. Anyone can be in that situation where you just like walk through some sort of like musty abandoned building. You don't think that much about it, and like, I don't think the water would like smell or taste. Like, it can conceal the potency of what's in it quite well. But it's, yeah, having that knowledge, it makes it like way more creepy watching it when, like, because there's all the shots of like this murky ass water with like sort of weird like oil stains running on top, and you just, and then watching it back, and you're like, oh, that's so sad. Like, that's what happened to like a lot of them.
That's right. But like, to be fair as well, it's a very beautiful set.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, the place is the mise-en-scene is very beautiful. Like everywhere they go is like these really beautiful fields with like old telephone wires or like tunnels. They kind of it's all very awesome. Like
Yeah. And
I
with
one thing that struck me throughout the film is that I want to be through all that. I want to go to there.
Oh man, for sure. Like, it looks, yeah, it's so nice. And they went nuts with the reverb. There's certain parts where they're like, there's no, it's really dry and anechoic outside, and then they're in like this room, and all of a sudden it's just like whoosh, like this huge like spring and plate reverbs. Like, they went crazy with it, and they're just like, they're in a room now. Like,
I love it, hey. I love it so much.
yeah. So, well, it
What
says,
else? How?
well, just regarding the toxic thing. The sound designer said, "We were shooting near Tallinn in the area around the small river Jagala with a half-functioning hydroelectric station. Up the river was a chemical plant, and it poured out poisonous liquids downstream. There is even this shot in Stalker, snow falling in the summer and white foam floating down the river. In fact, it was some horrible poison. Many women in our crew got allergic reactions to their faces. Tarkovsky died from cancer of the right bronchial tube. And Tolya Solzhenitsyn too. That it was all connected to the location shooting for Stalker became clear to me when Larissa Tarkovskaya died from the same illness in Paris."
Jeez. That's crazy, man.
Hmm.
That's crazy that tons of people die from this.
So they shot it at two deserted hydropower plants on that river.
It's crazy to think that that was the case, though. Like, it's crazy to think that they're just like, yeah, okay, fuck it. Like, there's not going to be too many terrible things going on here.
Yeah, can't blame them for not being aware.
Oh yeah, I don't blame them. Like, I don't think that there's any like, I don't think Tarkovsky or anyone was purposely like, no, fuck it, you have to go in there. Like,
No,
I just
he's had
don't think
bigger
that that was
filming
real.
mishaps. There's one, I think it was for the film after Nostalgia, I think it was, where they had a scene where they were like burning a house down, and someone on the crew said like, oh, you should make sure you bring a second camera for that scene. And they filmed the whole scene, and like the tapes fucked up or something, so they burnt down this whole house. The tape fucked up, and they couldn't use the footage. So that, and they have, I think it happened with Stalker as well. They had to refilm heaps of it because it was like something, it was like all green. Like, they bought some cheap film from somewhere, and it had like, it was like the color was all fucked up, so they had to refilm like all of it.
Really, I've seen a couple of films where that's happened before and they've just rolled with it, and which I really liked.
Yeah, soil and
They're just
green.
like,
They would
oh,
just be
can I go
like,
back
oh,
now? Might as well go there. Yeah, fuck it, whatever. But yeah, tell me what other takes you had for this film. I feel like you really vibe with this one.
Did you not?
No, I did. I thought it was awesome. You know, like, I don't know if it's better than Solaris, but
Yeah, that's fair.
you know, I thought it was beautiful.
Well,
Yeah, but yeah, tell me more. Tell me.
my last shameless take straight from Slavoj
Shameless.
In Tarkovsky's universe, we enter the spiritual dimension only via intense, direct physical contact with the humid heaviness of earth or stale water. The ultimate Tarkovskian spiritual experience takes place when a subject is lying stretched out on the earth's surface, half submerged in stale water. Tarkovsky's heroes do not pray on their knees with their heads turned upwards towards heaven. Instead, they listen intensely to the silent palpitation of the humid earth. One can see now why Lem's novel had to exert such an attraction on Tarkovsky. The planet Solaris seems to provide the ultimate embodiment of the Tarkovskian notion of a heavy, humid stuff, earth, which, far from functioning as the opposite of spirituality, serves as its very medium. This gigantic material thing which thinks literally gives body to the direct coincidence of matter and spirit. In a homologous way, Tarkovsky displaces the common notion of dreaming, of entering a dream in Tarkovsky's universe. The subject enters the domain of dreams not when he loses contact with the sensual material reality around him, but on the contrary, when he abandons the hold of his intellect and engages in an intense relationship with material reality. The typical stance of the Tarkovskian hero on the threshold of a dream is to be on the lookout for something with the attention of his senses fully focused. Then, all of a sudden, as if through a magic transubstantiation, this most intense contact with material reality changes it into a dreamscape. So that's like the scene when Ryder is like, fuck you, I'm going this way. And then he walks up to the house and then like the wind picks up and he's just kind of like, yeah, nah, like that bit, like that's what he's describing there, I think, where he just kind of goes to that dream state and he's like, I had a vision and it said this was dangerous and I'm not going to do it now.
Yeah, where he's like, oh, you told me not to go, and the guy's like, no, I didn't say anything. He's like, oh, and then the physicist is like, I think you made up your own voice from somebody else's voice, something like that. You know what I mean? He's like, I think you just wanted someone else to tell you not to go.
Like, they have such good banter, I like that. I think, especially like scientist and writer.
What do you make of this? They do, yeah. Yeah, certainly scientist and writer, like, they have a back and forth.
Well, because they're sort of like, they're opposite but similar. And writer just, like, he just gives him shit for, like, trying to, like, see everything too scientifically and literally, and writer's just like, you know, the world isn't like that. Like, he's kind of like, the scientist is sort of Newtonian and writer is more like quantum, and he's just like, no, everything is kind of random and weird and don't bother trying to make sense of everything because, like, it'll change once you think you have a handle on it. Like, you know, it's almost as if Ryder knows all along. He's kind of like, don't try and chase your desire because, like, when you approach it or when you get it, you'll realize you don't want it or it will change. Like, you'll get it and then it won't be it anymore and it'll be replaced.
Exactly. Like, I think, and then I wonder, if we could... with the nickname for Stalker as like, priest or man of faith or something.
He's a bit like that,
He's sort of that, isn't he? Like, he's like the real, religious sort of, and he quotes a lot of like Bible verses. He talks about faith a lot. Like, he talks about the sense of like, no one has faith anymore and what they really need to do is just believe, and the problem is that no one believes anymore. It's quite very interesting.
Yeah, because he has that massive monologue to his wife towards the end where he's just like, I've like took these two idiots there and they didn't appreciate it at all. Like, they were just like, they're just selfish idiots. And like,
yeah, and he's like, everybody's like that now.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, and he's just like, no one has any faith anymore, and that's not the problem with them, it's the problem with everybody. Like, but it's interesting. And I was thinking about it while I was watching. I was like, what does that even mean? Like, I can't even remember what it is to like believe in something like that. You know what I mean? Like, what does it mean to have faith?
You're saying you're just too gripped by postmodernity.
I think more just like, what is it to sort of like sort of believe even outside of like coming, like, because obviously he's like at the end of it when they get to the threshold of the room, he's just like, no, like you can't destroy this thing. Like it's the only thing that gives me purpose. Like, I was stuck in jail. I don't have anything for anyone to do. Like, I can't really give anyone anything. Like, this is the only way that I can show this thing.
Yeah.
Like, what? And like his sort of like, and I guess it's a bit of a Presley move, is to take people on a journey. It's not to get them to wherever it is that they want to go. It's to get to the journey is the thing, right? Like, not to make like a cliched
No, that's
sort of
right. No,
comment, but like,
yeah, for sure.
it's not the destination, it's the journey, right? Yeah,
And Ryder alludes to
that's his
that
job,
again.
right?
It,
Like,
yeah,
and
he alludes to that, like, because, he talks about, like, sort of, like, that, like, pain gives passion and, if we obtain our true desire, then we won't have anything to write about kind of thing because we won't have any pain. Like, we've removed our source of pain. And like it's sort of the journey to the zone
Would you
is
then?
metaphoric. It's sort of metaphorical of life in that, they can't go back any certain way. They have to go the long way. And like you don't actually want to get to the end because or the desire
There's
because
no
that's just
direct path
death,
or whatever.
right? So like yeah.
Yeah,
And
exactly. Like,
instead like it's about
and
like
also
you
like to get to
explore
the
your
ASEAN
pain,
as well,
aka
right?
your like
Like,
desire. So like they spend the film exploring, and
yeah.
not actually wanting to get to the destination.
Yeah, exactly. And what do you make of that then? Like, what do you make of the sense of like the writer, like that writer, sort of talking about this idea that like, the best thing sort of is torment or suffering or pain or whatever. Like, do you think that is the case? Like, do you think what do you think about that? As versus like the physicist or the scientist or whatever, who is just kind of like, this is good, this is a miracle, and then he's like, this is bad, I want to blow this shit up, like,
Yeah, I guess
because the writer's
it's
like,
almost like it's almost
what
the
is good,
classic
what is evil?
it's almost the classic like left versus right divide, or it's not the same, but it's similar in that the scientist is pragmatic and he's just like blind progress, that like just keep a head down and keep progressing and we're going somewhere that we need to go to, whereas the writer is more like you don't need to go anywhere, like pain is normal kind of thing. Like he's sort of like he would be against utopianism, saying that like it doesn't exist given the human condition and things like that.
Yeah, well, I guess the other case is that, well, the case continued forward would be that, like, although the scientist is pragmatic, that pragmatism is like a is like almost like a fool's pragmatism.
Yeah,
Like,
like we need to
this
do
is good and
this.
this is
I don't
bad,
know
and then the
why, but we
writer's
just need
like,
to do
well,
this. Yeah, I'm
yeah,
gonna blow
we
it
need
up.
to do
And
this. I
it,
don't know
well,
why.
that's like, and that's what the
Yeah,
scientists want to do
and
in Solaris. They're
I
like, we're
guess
just gonna blow up this fucking planet because it's not profitable.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I guess like, the scientist sort of works within a moralistic framework as well, right? Because he's kind of just like, well,
Well,
this is cool,
he
this
does
is
want to get
good,
rid of the bomb.
this is interesting.
I think his moral like his moral
He
motivation is like
eventually
the
does.
bomb like is dangerous, and should he wants to blow it up to get rid of it, and the zone there's no one around, so he thinks it's a safe place to blow it up, I guess. I don't know. Unless it's
Yeah,
like
well,
a
I guess
nuclear
like
bomb, in which
you could
case it's
also say
probably
that
gonna
like
fuck up all the people that live around there. I don't know. But I think it's just a
well, he said it
standard
was like a
bomb.
10 kiloton bomb or some shit like that.
Yeah,
But
I don't
well, he said it was like 10 kiloton or something, and that sounds like a lot. But
know. It might not be. I don't know.
like I guess yeah, exactly. It looks pretty technical, but it's a film or whatever,
Let me
so whatever.
consult my
But
bomb size chart on the
you
wall.
could say something. You could say something like that the stalker lied to the writer and the physicist and was like, well, the room that they were in was the room, and the room they were looking at wasn't the room. You know what I mean? And they really were where they had to do the little debate and their fight and stuff, was really the place where they were articulating their desire. Like, they just before they actually
Yeah, no,
entered it,
that's
they're like,
fair,
"This is
because
good and this is
it's all really
bad."
vague when they're leading to the room, because there's like, is this the room? Like when there's like the two eagles and like riders sitting on the edge of the pipe, it's like, is this the room? Because it looks pretty mystical. And
Yeah,
then an eagle, like they cut the
that was
tape so
really.
the eagle disappears and is
I
replaced
love
by
that
another
scene,
one.
and then comes back again. Yeah,
Yeah,
that was
super
so good.
random. And also when he
And it was
drops.
all those really weird
He drops
tunes
the
and stuff.
rock in that
But
pipe and it's like a 7 second free fall or something insane. Like, you know, it's like hundreds of meters down. And then they're like the meat mincer. It reminded me a little bit of Cube, actually, that whole section, because they're throwing the nuts like in Cube to test for booby traps.
Well, that's kind of what led me to that, like, conclusion, is that, like, the room before the room is really the room, like, because they have to tussle with their own, like, concern.
I hadn't thought of that. That's
You
yeah,
know,
that's
he's
pretty
just like, "Oh, you
interesting
know,
though,
this is
because it does
good."
seem like
But everyone.
because Ryder sits on the edge of that pipe and then he does a monologue to the camera. He talks into the camera. Super meta. He's like, and he's kind of like, this is what I've
There's a couple
learned.
of those in there.
Yeah. The wife does it towards the end as well. I love like it's just yeah, it's just totally breaks the kind of like what is
Stalker does it
accepted
as
in
well when he
film.
talks about the poem as well. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like it. And, like, I guess the other concern I guess I have is, like, so the scientist is like, he's like, "This is a miracle. We can't deny this." But a miracle is kind of like moralistic or like amoralist. Like, it's good for good people, but it would be terrible if it fell into the wrong hands. But, like, it was kind of interesting that he said that, because, like, the stalker was talking about, like, "Don't bring a gun in there, you'll die." And, like, "Did you not see the tanks before?" So, like, couldn't really figure that out. Like, I liked it, but I thought, like, if a bomb was to be detonated, what would be the other, what would be the return, the retribution of the zone? Like, could you destroy it if
True.
tanks and guns and stuff couldn't destroy it? Could, like, a 10 kilo
Yeah, true. It
proton
like
bomb?
amplifies the bomb and kills the whole country or something or the planet. Yeah.
Or it could be like, it could, I don't know, like, it could be, it's interesting, like, and I think what we're moving towards here is like what you brought up in the last episode, which is the intergalactic, what was that, the alien sort of picnic thing?
Yeah, well, because it is, but it's based on a
You
the
know
novel
what I
that
mean?
it's
Like,
based on is called Roadside Picnic,
Roadside Picnic.
and that's the whole. And Slavoj talks about that in the essay too, where like it's the whole concept of like, you know, aliens could visit, and you wouldn't even know, just the same as animals, like wouldn't really know if humans had like had a picnic near them on the roadside and left all these like random food scraps and stuff like. And say, you know, dangerous objects, like the aliens could leave their own dangerous objects that we look at and we're like, what the fuck is this? Or forces or
Which
whatever.
is the
And
zone,
the only thing
obviously.
we can know about them is that they're dangerous or like the zone.
Yeah, there's a TV show right now on Amazon Prime, I think, called The Loop. I'm not quite sure if that's the name. It's like a Swedish show, and that's sort of the same thing. Like, there's this town that has all these, like, really weird, like, alien artifacts everywhere. Like, well, not everywhere, but, like, around the place. And, people kind of live around them, and they sort of use some of the technology. But they sort of observe it in a weird, like, almost religious way, where, like, like, "Oh, this is good. This will help us," but at the same time, like, "We don't fuck with it too heavy." That's the same sort of thing, right? Like, these things are left here, and we can't really figure out what they were for. And it's cool if we have, like, some use for them, but at the same time, like, don't go playing with things like that.
I like the concept looked at
And I
from
guess, like,
more like the
it's
alien
interesting to think as
perspective,
well.
where like say they know that there were humans, they just don't even care enough to like acknowledge that. They're just like, You are such a like as if it's same as like, you know, if we had a picnic and there were ants there, we're not gonna like send a message to the ants like, we know that you are conscious, like hello, like we just don't care, like, and the aliens like in that scenario are sort of in a similar distance, and because there's like a Black Sabbath song where it's about aliens are like flying past Earth on a on their spaceship, and they like observe it, and they're like, and they keep going. They're just like, yeah, no, like that place has got nothing of value to us. We'll just keep on sailing. Planet Caravan.
I mean, yeah, that's sounds like a Pantera song as well, right? I think there's a Pantera song called Caravan or something like that as
Might have
well,
covered it.
which is interesting. Yeah, they may, but yeah, I don't know. Like, that's an interesting case. Like, it's sort of like the idea that like this Adam Curtis idea that there's just like this really odd political space where like desire is so, and I think it's true that desire is so weird in the way that like you can fully believe here's an example, like what's the difference between someone who believes in God and goes to church every day and someone who goes to church every day and thinks they believe in God? Like, it's the same thing, they do the exact same thing, but like there's no difference, right? There's no difference between someone who's a true believer and someone who does everything else that the true believer does. You know, you could say that they're both true believers. So, like, you know, like, you could fool yourself, like, someone could fool themselves into believing they're doing the exact, I don't know, it's such a weird sort of thought to think that, like, there's a way that people can, like, do things and treat themselves into believing they're doing it despite the fact that, like, things aren't the case. You know what I mean? And I sort of think that's the case with the zone as well, whereas it's like, it
No,
could
that's
be
a
that,
great point.
like,
It's like a it's a
nothing,
symbiotic thing,
nothing
and
happens, and
so the
nothing happens
more
either.
faith you have in the zone, the more you get out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And like, it's no shock that, like, you know, you have a writer and a scientist and like a man of it'd have to be like these really like archetypical sort of people rather than like, you know, the store owner and like, you know, whatever, like the newspaper like guy. Like, it has to be these sort of these really big
They
people
fit
that
it,
are like
yeah. So they
doing
have to
different
have
things.
like their own personal philosophies that closely match the, you know, the general scientist and the kind of the writer, this semi-philosophical writer type guy who is sort of, you know, he's more aware of the relationship between his desire and his conscious self compared to the scientist who's kind of just like,
Yeah,
I
well,
want this and I'm gonna go and get it.
I think even, yeah, exactly. Well, I think even like at the end, Stork sort of talks about it, like, oh, these elites, they do, you know, they kind of like they want to keep pushing and pushing and pushing, and the problem is that like their pushing is going to just lead to more pushing. Like, they're going to like keep looking for the thing. Like, there's no point in them ever looking because they won't see what they want. You know what I mean? Like, there has to be what's your take on this? Like, there has to be faith. Like, do you think that that's the case? Do you think like the loss of faith is like why people are like so consumed with desire?
That's a tricky one.
Or maybe let me like re let me like reiterate the question then. Like, do you think it's necessary to have faith to like avoid the problem of desire?
I think like there's a small amount of faith in abandoning the like wholehearted chase of your desire, I guess. Like it takes a small amount of faith, even if you just put it like bring it back to a more everyday level of like some sort of consumerism. You know, think about me with like music equipment, and it's like sometimes I might think so strongly that I need something to make a certain song or sound. And it's important to pull back and be like, you don't like it feels like a need when it's that really strong desire. It feels like I need, you know, I can't go on creating without the thing. And so you have to have faith in it, sort of, you know, it's sort of defying what seems logical from your unconscious you have to defy that with a bit of faith, because like logic doesn't take any faith because it works perfectly. It's mathematical. And so we, you know, you can draw a perfect line from anywhere to anywhere using logic, but you have to have a little bit of faith to abandon logic and say, and just go on a more just like a worded interpretation of your desire and think, okay, my unconscious thinks I want this thing and need this thing, but I'm going to consciously not get the thing in order to get the thing that I truly want, which is to just create without consuming more things. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. And I think, I think that's the hardest part, right? Like, I think it's like, you know, like,
I think everyone has their own personal struggle with that, like, in some other way.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think, yeah, and I think, like, you know, Stalker also sort of does the thing where they're like, where Tchaikovsky is kind of saying, or, you know, like the people who wrote Zapitnik are kind of saying, like, well, you might know exactly what you want, but, you know, like, desire is kind of like trepidatious in the way that, like, what you want is exactly the opposite of what you want. You know what I mean? Like, or the worst thing that you
well,
like,
it's not opposite, but know, it really, is at odds with what you want. So it's stopping you. For example, yeah, like in your case, you're not really like much of a consumerist type of guy, but you like to write and, you know, you have an interest in philosophy and things like that. And so I guess there's an ego aspect to your writing in that you want to write something that is of value, but you also want, like, before you write, you want to learn, but you could learn infinitely and write nothing, but there's a certain point where you have to stop learning and start writing, and that's the part where you take the leap of faith to, like, okay, I've learned enough, you know, because you have to kind of switch off and start and go into writing mode and pull back from, like, infinite learning and, you know, just obtaining something else externally. You have to, like, have the faith to just, no, I'm ready to write now.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess, like, the other thing would be, like, my desire is that, like, I can do this. I don't need, like, these things anymore. Like,
exactly. So, yeah, there might be certain, like, when you pit yourself against, you know, the big names in philosophy or writing, you know, and you, when you idolize their work, it's even harder because you look at yours and you're like, oh, I'll never amount to that. I'll learn more and more and more and more. And it will never be enough.
Yeah. But I guess you can have, like, in that sense, with that more and more and more, you can have, like, that sort of, what is it, like, the Nietzschean, like, Übermensch or whatever, like, and Mark Fisher talks about this, like, where, you know, the Übermensch is sort of supposed to be this, like, ultimate figure, but, like, if you think about it now, the Übermensch is sort of enfeebled by, like, too much information, like, nothing can happen. Like, it can't do anything because it's just like, oh, I don't know what to do. Like, I have too much information. Like, I can't make it a move here or there because it's wrong this way and it's wrong that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
that links closely to all that form of creativity as well.
Yeah.
Or that paradox of creativity.
Yeah. So you kind of have, like, at least, like, a post-modern perspective would be that, like, you know, it's a bit of an issue whether you go left or right or you go up and down. It's all a problem. And I think a lot of people now, I watched a recent Jacobin podcast where they were talking about, like, postmodernity as, like, a real intellectual step backwards. It was a real problem. It shouldn't have really happened. I thought it was an interesting case.
Like knowing too much about every subject?
Well, if anything, it was like, it was a bit like, no one was really, like, taking a position anymore. All the positions that were being taken were like, well, you can't, like, so in, like, our, this is me taking a stance here in, like, one of the clubs that I run. Someone was talking about how, like, the worst thing that someone could do was to, like, write for somebody else. And, like, or, like, you know, talk for somebody else who, like, you know, use someone else's voice. I was like, oh, that's an interesting take. What's the case there? And they were like, well, you know, sort of like disenfranchising them or, like, belittling them. I was like, yeah, but, like, what if they wrote and they use someone else's point. Like, it's a kind of a problematic situation where that sort of postmodern attitude is like, we can't do that because then this person will get to speak, and then if they did speak, but they did something else to someone else, so it's like almost this labyrinthine attitude where like nothing can move. You know what I mean? Like, there's like the position is always kind of bad. Whereas like really, what you want to do is kind of be like, your position should be like, well, yeah, there's inherent problems in every position, but we should move forward, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Well,
exactly. So.
relevant to that, there's a like the one quote I wrote down from Stalker, and he says, and he's it seems like he might be talking about that. He says, passion is the friction between one's soul and the outside world. He says, weakness is a
Yeah, this is
great
good. This
thing,
is
and
good.
strength is nothing. When a man is just born, he is weak and flexible. When he dies, he is hard and insensitive. When a tree is growing, it is tender and pliant. But when it's dry and hard, it dies. Hardness and strength are death's companions. Pliancy and weakness are expressions of the freshness of being, because what has hardened will never win. And so that links pretty closely to like that whole Übermensch idea of overfilling yourself, overfulfilling your desires so much so that you're not able to output any creative work because you've taken in too much. And then, you know, there's no room for creativity because you've taken in too much, and like you've sort of been overwhelmed, and it seems like, well, you know, how could I write any of these things? It's almost like me overquoting Slavoj for this podcast. It's like he said everything too well. So, what, you know, what more to say? Just read his essay. Don't listen to this shit.
Well, I guess it's also the case that like you and I run into this problem like a bit whenever I write, is that like if you take in too many like points into account, then you're kind of stuck as you're just like, oh yeah, this. But I know this person said this, and so what was that? And it's like, so there's no way to kind of like get out of it. You
It's
know
like
what I
that
mean?
fear
Like,
of
so
contradicting
that.
yourself or someone like rebutting what you've written.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think that like someone is gonna rebut what you've said. Like, there's gonna be a rebuttal. There's gonna be a rebuke somewhere. Like, it has to be. Like, it's like you know, have you heard the name Francis Fukuyama?
Yeah. He didn't he
He
write
did
the
an essay called
end of
History.
something? End of what's it called?
End of History.
Yeah.
End of History.
People hate on that book though. I haven't read it,
Yeah,
but I've
and
heard bad things.
he was kind of just like, yeah. Huh?
I've only heard bad things about the book.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of bad like talk about that, but like he sort of was just like, well, this is like when the Cold War ended, he was kind of just like, well, this is the end, really. Like all other countries just have to look forward to like a Western democracy sort of thing from now on. Like this is nothing else is going to change from here on out. And obviously that was wrong, but like I guess retroactively you can think that like the only way that people were able to say that it was wrong was because he wrote that. So like in the it was kind of good that he did write that. You know, like
It's a good
it's good
point.
that like you know he was wrong. It's good that he was wrong
Yeah.
because then people could say like, well, this is you know, and it must feel bad for him because people are just
Well,
like,
someone's gonna take
you
the
fucking
fall.
idiot, like you
Yeah.
thought. But like it's good that like you know, and I think it sort of goes back to what we were talking about like with like Freud and like civilization and its discontents is that like you know, it wasn't all right, of course, like there were some problems, but it's good to write stuff that you kind of like hedge your bets on, because at least people can be like, oh, that was wrong, you know, like
Nice.
and it's not that bad to be wrong sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you can apply that to it. Like I always kind of when we talk about things like that, if they're related to something creative, I think my mind automatically jumps to like a musical context. It's like you wouldn't know what dissonance is without hearing it. Like, you know, we know what it is mathematically and scientifically, like in terms of the ratio of two intervals, like and you know, this is dissonant because of 3-to-2 ratio or whatever, like that, you know, so the brain finds that inharmonic and that's natural. But you wouldn't really know what it is until you've actually heard, you know, a minor second interval played on an instrument. You don't fully know, like you could understand all of the maths, but if you were deaf and you'd been born deaf, you wouldn't have a true experience of what dissonance is. And so what I mean by that is
Yeah.
like someone's got to make like the bad dissonant music so that we know what where to go with good music.
Yeah, exactly. You have to make noise in order for someone to be like, that's not music, for someone else to be like, that is music. You know
And there it is. So that's, yeah, so
what I
all art is valuable,
mean?
even the worst.
Mistakes are good sometimes. Some mistakes are just plain bad,
Yeah.
but some mistakes are good.
It's weird. Well, like,
It's
if you
good.
look at,
There are good
like,
mistakes, there are bad
Tarkovsky's
mistakes.
films, like, he's not like the Beethoven of films, but they are sort of, they're held in high regard by, like, knowledgeable film critics and stuff, but he was more of like a, I would equate him more to like Miles Davis of films because he did weird things and like was slightly revolutionary and intertwined philosophy with science fiction concepts, with like a strong narrative, and his use of like, really ambient techniques, so like super slow pans, like 5 minute pans that he's like, that's what he's famous for.
Yeah.
So it, he's not like the Mozart or Beethoven where they used the
They really
set structure
crafted
and took
their
that to a limit, like in terms of making really nice melodies
art.
and harmonies. His was sort of dissonant in a way, but in the kind of Miles Davis, Jimi Hendrix way where it's weird, but it somehow works. Like, changing the color to sepia just randomly and then
Yeah,
back to
that
color. I'm just gonna do this, like.
was interesting, yeah. No, I like that. Hey, I think you're right. I think that it's worthwhile that someone takes risks. Like you said, you might not become a master craftsman of your art or whatever, but I
Well, it's
think
more
that
about the
Tarkovsky is
contribution. Like,
thought
it's a
of as
selfless act. You're just contributing to the body of knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. You're trying new things, and I liked the sepia tone. I think I might need to take some time to really come to terms with it, but I thought it
Well, it happens in Solaris as well, like
was
random black and
cool.
white, I guess.
Yeah, it does. This is true.
But that might have been more
Do you have any more
purposeful.
takes? Sorry.
No, all
Yeah,
good.
I'm not sure. Hey.
No, man, I think
I need a pee,
No,
so I
we've
don't
done
know. Are
pretty
we
we've done
calling
it's
it?
no, we're nearly there. I was kind of apprehensive because like I had such high regard of the film and I didn't want to like botch the podcast because it's just like when I read the
Too
Slabboy
bad.
essay, I was like, damn, it's like, I want to make sure we hit the right points because like it's such a quality film. But in the same way as like what we just talked about,
Oh,
it's like, just you can't really do wrong. Like, I could have read way more and been way more versed on the themes of the film, but at the end of the day, we've done something.
I think also look, if you want to make like a Zizek essay out of these things, we're gonna need more than a week between.
Yeah.
There's going to be a little bit more time to really think about the concepts around it. And even then, can you really say what you've written and can you write what you've said? It's a bit hard to
Yeah.
do both of them.
But
But
I wouldn't want to
yeah, no,
spend more
I
than 2 weeks with this particular film anyway, because it's just like, yeah, it is draining.
I really liked it. Yeah, oh yeah, it was. But I really liked it. I thought it was brilliant. I love that nothing happened.
So where do you rank it?
That sounds bad. That sounds very
No.
sarcastic,
I know
but
what you mean.
I
Anyone knows what
love
you mean,
the
don't
fact
worry.
that.
Where do you rank it?
That was really good. I reckon I rank it on Solaris though.
Was Solaris your
I
top
prefer
before
Solaris.
this?
I think it was, yeah. What do you think?
I think Brazil's still my favorite. I'll put this just below Brazil.
Oh, wow, damn, okay.
I don't know.
Nice
Hazy,
though, good
hazy
choice.
memory.
I
That's
think
how I feel
that's
today.
I like
That's
that one.
all.
I'm a big Tchaikovsky fan, so I got respect.
All right. Well, I should. What's
What do
next?
you, what do you, what do you, what are we trying to do next week? I don't know. What are you feeling?
Logan's Run, nice and light.
Yeah.
It's light and
Yeah, we'll
tangy.
go back to a nice
Just
chill one.
yeah, it's very chill, man. It's so chill. Watched it in like year 10 English.
Yeah.
Yeah, you good with that?
Okay, in that case, Logan's Run it
You
is.
sure?
What day do you want to do it?
You sure?
Yeah, I mean,
Why
look, it
don't
can always be changed.
you
I'll
tell me
overthink
what
about it,
day
but
you
like,
want to do it
as a
and
running.
commit to that day?
Oh, wow. Wow.